Okay, guys. Thank you.
Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now Blog Talk Radio Show, sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Tammy Schaffstall. I'm calling in from Lighthouse Point, Florida, and I'll be your host tonight. I'm also a survivor of child abuse. Tonight's show is an open mic show, question and answer, call-in discussion. We'd love to have you guys call in. We know a lot of people do stream in, and we do need some panel members, so please call in. It's going to be very informative. The telephone number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And our founder is going to, our founder and co-host is going to be Mr. Bill Murray with his 12-step recovery program. So that's going to be exciting, very, very informative. Before we get started, let me tell you a little bit about NASCA. The National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse is a nonprofit 501c3 organization, and we're self-supporting through our own contributions. If you'd like to donate to NASCA, we really could use the money. If you choose to do so, it is tax deductible. So please, please, please feel free to give. Here at NASCA, we have a single purpose to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two perspectives. We educate the public, especially as getting a society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, and we present the facts to show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone through numerous paths. Providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone who is interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. If you'd like to call in, please do so. The number again is 646-595-2118. Here at NASCA, we're fighting for kids and serving adult survivors. Be aware, be a voice, be a hero, be brave. We do have a couple of people who have called in, so thank you very much. I'm going to start with Linda from New Jersey, and I'm going to open Linda's mic.
Hi,
good
Tammy.
Evening, Linda. How are you?
Hey,
good.
Linda.
Looking forward to hearing
thank
Bill
you.
Talk, as always.
Oh, bless your heart. We love Bill. We always like to listen to Bill talk. Thank you so much for volunteering to call in. I know I didn't have a trailer tonight, and you and Joe both reached out, and I apologize that I did not have time to call either one of you back. It's just I look up and 4 hours go by every day. So please forgive me for that. But thank you for being here.
Thanks for all you do.
Absolutely. Thank you. Okay, next we have Bobby Hyde, who is calling in from Miami, Florida. Good evening, Bobby Hyde. How are you?
It's so nice to be back.
Well, we're glad to have you back. Bobby, how are you guys surviving in Miami-Dade? You know, they opened all of Florida except for Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach. So our area is the only area in the state of Florida that didn't get opened up.
open what? Baskin-Robbins ice cream stores? Where are they open?
No, Monday they're open and they're going. We're going to phase one.
I didn't hear nothing. Where are they open? What do they open, Tammy?
They're opening the state back up, Bobby. We've been under we've been under quarantine.
I understand. What are they, honey, darling? What are they open?
They're opening the boat ramps, the beaches, 25% in restaurants. Like I said, except for these three counties. So, a lot of the country is opening back up. But thank you for being here, Bobby. I appreciate it. Next, I'm going to go to our founder, co-host, and speaker tonight, Mr. Bill Murray, who is from Los Angeles / Pompano Beach, Florida. Good evening, Bob. Bill, how are you?
I'm sick and tired of listening to this guy. Holy crow. That's what Linda said. I don't blame her.
Linda would never.
Tammy, yeah, she did. To be honest, I was on the show, which we call the recovery meeting this morning, this afternoon, the Zoom show. Then I listened mm-hmm. to the interview that I had videotaped with Tracy Maxfield, which was an hour long. And now I'm doing this show for another 90 minutes. It's like, it's bill overload. I don't want to make people sick and tired of me. They probably already are, but that's okay. Anyway.
Well, there's a lot of opportunities for people to get involved in NASCA. I wasn't involved in any of those today, so this is the first time I've had the pleasure of hearing your voice. So there.
Well, I'm delighted to do this. I'm being facetious about it. Not the part about Linda, what she said, but what I said about me. I am very happy. I'm all about, trying to be in the solution and share the solution. So I hope that tonight there will be some people who call in and they ask me not so much my life story, which many people have heard, versions of it over time, and it's not going to change. It's what it is. But more about the process of recovery that I've used or the process that they're using, and they want comments on it or just some questions, things like that. So that's the sense of this show is supposed to be about. And, of course, all our co-hosts on Tuesdays and Thursdays are also survivors. They're professionals in one way or another, but they're also survivors and speak from either of those perspectives. Some speak from their professional background, and some speak from just the common experience that we have as survivors, or both. So I'm happy to do either one tonight, but I hope that the show is, fairly solution-oriented. That's my goal.
Okay. Well, thank you for being here. For those who may be streaming in who haven't heard Bill's story before, he is the founder of NASCA, and Bill's recovery was based on the 12-step program. Now we got a little bit of a different 12-step program here in our program, correct, Bill? It's not the AA 12-step, but it is a 12-step.
Yes. We don't promote any particular style of recovery, but one possible style among others, like there's ministry and psychiatry and psychology and therapy and life coaches and, and groups of all different kinds. And one of the things that's available to people is the use of a 12-step program, which happens to be my personal experience, but they can follow any path they want. We are not a 12-step group, but I don't avoid talking about my own background as other people, maybe they're in therapy and they talk about that or whatever it is. And I'm happy to talk about any of those things. I mean, I've been in recovery so long that I'm pretty familiar with, all the different, we actually came up with one, Linda and I, today that stumped us. Somebody came on and said they were going to do a program that neither one of us, nor Gidon, who's also a longtime recovery person, had ever heard of. So we got to figure that one out. But anyway, we hear about them all.
Okay.
Yeah, we did.
Well, wonderful. Well, what I was referring to, if you go to the NASCA website, www.nasca.org, and you look at the links on the right-hand side, there's one called the 12 Tradition. They're not steps, they're traditions, correct?
Right, correct. And that's different than steps, but they are still taken from AA, but they were not created when the 12 steps came about. In 1935, the first two sober men stayed sober for the rest of their life, and that's when AA marks its beginning. 3 years later, they published a book, and the book was called Alcoholics Anonymous, and it had the 12 steps that they and 100 people by that time had been using. And the book became a very popular success. In fact, the group took its name from the book. They didn't have a name before that. And then 15 or 20 years later, after that lengthy time of experience, they wrote out the 12 traditions, which are to the groups as a whole, to each individual group, but the groups as a whole, sort of the spiritual principles by which the groups run. And frankly, I created NASCA also to resemble as close as possible the 12 traditions, because I have never found a better structure for any organization. So the 12 traditions are not the 12 steps, but they do come from the same resource, if you want. They're an appendix in the back of this thing called the Big Book, Alcoholics Anonymous, whereas the 12 steps are the basic content of the program. Does that make sense?
It certainly does. Well, thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
I'd like to give that number one more time if anybody wants to call in, 646-595-2118. You guys streaming in, please call in. Kathy, I know that you're probably streaming in. Please call. We'd love to have you. With that said, Bill, as our special co-host and special guest, I'm going to turn it over to you. If there's something that you want to talk about or set the tone for the show, the mic is yours.
All right. Well, I will talk a little bit about 12-step recovery as it's related to child abuse and trauma, since that's kind of my background. But again, we can take questions from any perspective that someone wants. I do want you to know that we actually did a series of shows with Rivka Ettery, who is a person in recovery, who wrote a book on how to use the 12 steps in recovery. We did a series of shows that started in late 2014. I looked it up. And every 2 weeks, we did another show. And each show was the next step as we did this series. We did the series three times in a row, the steps three times in a row. So there are versions of the discussion that was held between Rivka Ettery and myself about our perspective on each of the steps three different times. So starting in late 2014, you can follow it's every 2 weeks, follow these shows if you're interested. And, you know, it's a good way to see how the dynamics of this can work. In fact, I might create a page so you don't have to hunt for them as hard. But anyway, we've discussed this for a long time. And indeed, she, like myself, believes in the ability to use the same 12-step material for basically any issue. Like you know, probably the Overeaters Anonymous uses them, Gamblers Anonymous uses them, Narcotics Anonymous uses them, and so on. There are many, many programs now that use the same 12 steps. Not all use the same traditions, but they use the 12 steps, simply, you know, replacing their issue, whatever they feel is primary to them. And I've written out a version of that. In fact, in the description of tonight's show, there is a link to a website that I created where it says that Bill's Recovery is 12-step based. That link will take you to a page which will open on top of whatever you're looking at, so you won't lose yourself. And it is an attempt to describe very quickly an overview, the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and some formats for meetings and so forth. So we could take a look at that if anybody wanted, but you know, it is there. This is independent of NASCA that I created this, but it is offered as a possible you know, path to recovery. For example, the first step in AA says we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives have become unmanageable. Well, ours says we admitted we were powerless over the trauma and abuse of our youth and that our lives have become unmanageable. So it's simply you replace the pertinent phrase or phrases in the place of the inappropriate word like alcohol or alcoholism. And that's how they work. In my experience, they worked very well. When I started to get in recovery, there was no belief even that little boys could be sexually abused, frankly. So I had to kind of swim, find my way by, you know, first of all, making a decision to deal with my alcohol and drug use, which was terrible. And I did that through AA. And when I heard there that, you know, you could use this design for living, is what they called it, for any problem, that's when I started applying the 12 steps, not only to the drinking and the using of drugs, but also to all the issues I was facing around my child abuse. And I began talking about it then. So I've been doing this a long time, and apparently it's working, because I think I'm 37 years sober, and so clean and sober and in recovery since 1984, I think it was. I was 30, and now I'm 67. So,
okay.
So that's the deal.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, cool beans. Does anybody have any comments on what Bill has shared so far? Linda's got a mic closed. All right, Bobby, do you have a comment that you'd like to make? Or Linda's opened her mic, so if anybody has a comment they'd like to make, please do so. All mics are open.
Oh, here I am.
Go ahead, Bobby.
I guess I haven't said this at one time or another. Or I have said it one time, when I did also attend 12-step programs. And as Bill tells his story, and I was in 12-step a long time, and I had plenty of coffee after meetings for hour, you know, social meetings afterwards. People, and I didn't get close to people's stories. So, of course, the new reason why you're in that particular step program is going on, that you understood. But the Bill's story is the first story I heard. Well, I've been listening to Bill for 4 years, so hasn't been one night listening to Bill for 4 years. I haven't memorized his story, but I know his story. I don't know this about anybody else in 12-step programs. And I've been in programs a long time. Somehow either it takes an extra special person to stay sober. That's what my point I'm making here. Because I'm there a lot of people counting days. I'm there with not a lot of people putting on the board many years. So it takes a lot of stamina and a lot of whatever the thesaurus says to take your story and use 12-step programs to be sober. But of course, there's a lot of spokes to the wheel. So you just don't stay, 12-step program and that's the end of it. You have to have camaraderie and you have to have people to assist you to find you because you're really lost when you walk into a 12-step program room. And you listen to stories, and I did for 6-7 years before I get sober. I could not understand one blessed word they would say. It was not mumbo jumbo. It's just like, I can't. Are you up there? Are you down there? I mean, where do you come from? And what's your story? And how do you stay sober? And what do you grab on? What do you grab onto each day to keep you sober? Yeah, it's just, you know, because I kept drinking. I kept listening because, you know, I had really fantastic drinks, you know, that they were serving, you know, really high-powered Hungarian vodkas and Czechoslovakian vodkas and Bulgarian vodkas, and they were smooth. So I kept drinking. But it took me 6-7 years to realize how to be sober. Just stop drinking. And that was my story. But it didn't stop me from my sobriety, stopping drinking. I wasn't really sober. This is 2020. This is 2020. I started in AA 30 years ago. So what is this, 30 years ago? Believe me. I wasn't sober 30 years. I've been sober since I met NASCAR 4 years ago. Oh, damn me, I'll tell you that. After I came to NASCAR 4 years ago, I heard Bill talk. I was sober. Believe me. Because he just told it, you know. He was bringing in every Tom, Dick, and Harry from every quarter of the world and telling you, you know, get sober. And I never had an audience. I mean, I never had links that I heard from. I applaud Bill, believe me. I applaud NASCAR, you know. It's stay sober in NASCAR, you know. It's not easy in any program. Not easy in any program at all. Stay sober.
Okay, but, well, thank you for sharing that, Bobby. I didn't mean to cut you off. You're absolutely correct. It's not easy. I didn't mean to cut you off. I thought you were done. I'm sorry. Okay. I wanted to agree with you. I do want to say that you're absolutely correct that it isn't easy to break addictions. I'm struggling with a cigarette addiction right now. I quit for 35 years, and I just can't, you know, with the stress I'm under right now, I just can't seem to shake it. Getting off of addictions is really tough, and as survivors, we have to deal with it because a lot of times what we endured as children, we want to escape ourselves. We want to numb the pain, whether it's drugs, alcohol, sex, could be cigarettes, it could be anything, the chosen vice. So it's very difficult. So I commend all of you guys for that, and hopefully one day, hopefully I can, you know, get off that damn cigarette kick that I've seemed to have gotten myself back on. Survivors understand, anyone who may be listening, understand that a lot of us deal with that. And we got to give ourselves a break sometimes because, you know, what we endured, the trauma that we endured is horrific. Even if it happened once, it's horrific. You know, it's affected us for the rest of our lives. A lot of times, you know, somebody's 15 minutes of relief, you know, causes that child a lifetime of pain, you know, or somebody's in the moment of, you know, losing their temper and, you know, beating a child causes, a lifetime of pain, permanent pain in our lives. And so, you know, a lot of us do go to that. Bill, I wanted to go back to you. Am I right on or am I out in left field? What are your thoughts on what I just said?
Well, let me say it this way. I'm not surprised that it didn't work until it worked. I was desperate to find something to help me with the original secret of my youth. And, of course, I tried several times to tell what I thought would be appropriate people and I got no help from any of them. The first one I told was a priest that gave me a confession over it. He heard my whole story, and then I thought I was getting help from him, and he turned out to be a predator too. Well, that didn't help. That was in high school. And then later, I discovered drugs and alcohol, and they were a an elixir to me, a solution, if you want. But eventually in my 20s, you know, I went to rape hotlines. They didn't want to hear from me. I went to Planned Parenthood. They didn't want to hear from me. I went to my parish priest, a couple of different parish priests. They didn't know what to do with me. And I even went to a psychiatrist with my mother and father, who had never known the story, in the hopes that he would help. And I also wanted it to be me telling my story in a place that was safe for my dad, frankly, who I was afraid would die of a heart attack hearing it, and he nearly did. The psychiatrist offered no help, almost no comment, and we went back to him about four times until, you know, my whole story had been told and all the questions had been answered and all that. And my parents, you know, they centered on what had happened to them, because most people know I was abused in the church and we were extremely Catholic. So they thought that the church had offended them by allowing this priest and brother and group of people to molest their son. There was no focus on me and what I needed. And the shrink had no idea what to do with me. I never got any drugs from him, nothing, no direction. And then it occurred to me that maybe I should attend one of these AA meetings. And I didn't get sober right away. It took me probably 6 months at least of fluttering around the edges of recovery before I proved to myself, frankly, that I could not control my drinking nor my drug use. And that's when I gave up trying and I came into AA. I always say, and it was literally true, I crawled into the AA meeting where I eventually started my recovery. 6 months into it, surrender and saying, okay, I'm going to be teachable. I'm going to let you guys tell me what you've done, because the power greater than myself that I could believe in at that point was sort of the combined knowledge of those who had been there before me. That's when it worked. And it was after it started working and my brain cleared, and it didn't take that long, a few weeks, that I fell into a home group, which is a local group that you repeatedly go to, where I was telling pieces of my child abuse story almost every time I shared. And I was terrified that the groups were going to throw me out, because they do have a singleness of purpose there, and that their singleness of purpose is they only talk about issues of childhood, of alcoholism. And fortunately, they were enlightened enough to say, in my group, there was a guy that was 10 years sober and one that was 12 years sober. They were the elders of the group. They told me that although they didn't understand this issue, they could certainly see how someone who grew up like I did would have this issue that sort of, you know, made them drink as alcoholically as I did right from the beginning. I drank like a slob right from the beginning. There was no social drinking for me. I drank to oblivion. They said, we can see how this is part of your story. And so you keep coming back and telling it. And by the way, even though we don't understand it, there's probably going to be people coming in here after you who will want to hear what you're saying and will identify with it. In other words, they gave me permission. And that was 37 years ago. So, but the point is, I had to get sober first. It wasn't going to work the other way. And then all of my recovery has been simultaneous, because I've always told at least portions of my story and sometimes my complete story if they asked me to lead a meeting. I spoke at a couple of conventions where I told, you know, my story to a huge, massive crowd. It's always been part of Bill's recovery. And, you know, I was fully 25 years or something like that in recovery before I launched NASCA. So I had a lot of foundation before I even considered doing the work that we're doing today. And it's done, by the way, by many people, not just me. But I am privileged to be recognized as the founder. I am the founder.
Bill, are you there? Did we lose you?
Yeah.
No, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Can you hear me? My recovery was my starting NASCA was based on the fact that I had looked around for some kind of recovery group that I could visit that would be about child abuse, and I couldn't find any, which was shocking to me. 25 years into my own recovery, I couldn't find anything. So I started NASCA, and it fulfills the many aspects of child abuse and trauma that I recognized as time gone on, had gone on, were not being covered. And that's why it is the way it is. It covers all the bases. It's not just about men. It's not just about, you know, priest's abuse. It's not just about sexual assault and so forth. It's about all of it, because we all need help. Violent abuse, emotional trauma, neglect, and sexual assault are all covered here in any combination. It's really how this all started. But Bobby, not getting sober until he heard me, I don't know about that. But maybe it helped. If it helped, God bless you, Bobby. You know, that's my intention, is to share my story so that other people can identify and perhaps start their own recovery journey. So good to share, I guess. Yeah.
All right. Does anybody have any comments? Go ahead.
I just want to share that when I came in probably when I was 21 to AA, I knew there was something wrong with me, but I didn't know what, because I didn't have any memories at that time. And every 2 years that I was in AA, I would relapse, and I couldn't figure out why. But I kept coming, and then I had a food addiction as well, an eating disorder, so I went to OA, and that seemed to help. But there was something there that I just could not get to, and it wasn't until I went to counseling school that my memories came back about sexual abuse. But there was no group for that. There was nowhere to go for that. There was no place to sit amongst survivors and talk about it. And I was even surprised that I found NASCA, because I hadn't seen anything like it. So that's my story with the 12 steps. And but this is perfect for me in a lot of ways. So anyway, that's my story.
Well, you're absolutely right. I was really beat up when I came into AA group, and I didn't notice it until 6 months of floundering. See, I went out and did what the big book actually recommends. It says, if you have any question about whether you're an alcoholic, go out and try some controlled drinking. Well, that's what I did. And for about 6 months, I originally bought a beer, put it in the refrigerator, looked at it overnight, didn't drink it, drank it the next day, and nothing happened. And then since that worked, I got two beers, put them in the refrigerator, looked at them overnight, didn't drink them, then drank them the next day, and nothing happened. And then the next day, I bought three beers, or maybe more, I don't know, and I looked at them overnight. And when I didn't drink them, I went, well, I might as well just get drunk and see what happens. And that's when I discovered that once I got drunk, I couldn't stop. And I went back to marijuana maintenance for a number of weeks, and I was beating myself up. I was so sorry. I was such a sorry lot. You know, I was miserable. Poor me. Oh, my God. Poor me, you know. And I was the only one that it had ever happened to, and I didn't understand it and so forth. But I'd been to a couple of AA meetings, and I knew where they were held. I knew more than a couple, but I knew where they were held. And finally, after that period of time, I gave up. It's all about admitting that we're powerless, and I needed to do that to myself to find my powerlessness and admit it. And as I say, when I came in 84, I really surrendered to the program. And I did Alcoholics Anonymous alcoholically. I did it as hard as I could, as much as I could. Didn't feel safe anywhere except in meetings. So I was going to 3 and 4 meetings a day for months. I couldn't work. I didn't have a house. I was living in my vehicle for a while, then in somebody's garage for a while, then in somebody's apartment for a while. And then I got a call to go to New York And people said, don't go to New York. You're only 3 months sober. But I said, I have to because I'm going to lose my apartment in New York if I don't. And I went, and the first thing I did was check in to an AA meeting. And I continued to go to meetings every day. Ended up staying in New York for a year. Now, the New York programs are very different than the California programs. They're all slap happy in California. They applaud you, and they whoop it up, and they give you birthdays, not anniversaries, where you get a cake and you get to speak and all this attention, because we're all like stars, I guess, in Florida, you know, in California. But in New York, they're business-minded, and they have you like sit down and shut up, and, you know, you don't have anything to share that's worthwhile, that kind of attitude. So I started my own meeting. And I carried on this tradition that was more like California of a style that allowed people to talk a little more liberally about their own life experience. And mine was child abuse, sexual abuse. Again, I almost never heard anybody ever talk about it. I agree with Bobby. You don't hear about it. But you heard about it from me if you were around me for the last 25 years and now 37 years, whatever it is. Because I was given permission and I took it. And I believe that eventually that it was God's will that I'd been sexually assaulted. It was God's will that I became an alcoholic. And it was God's will that I get sober and recover. All of that being God's will, who am I to say I shouldn't move forward and do everything I possibly could, which is how I did my programs. really hard and diligently. And that's what worked. So there is a line in the book that says, half measures avail us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. That's just before the 12 steps in the book. And I took all these things to heart. So there was no such thing as half measuring. You can't half do it. You got to throw yourself in. At least for me, I had to throw myself in completely for it to work, and immerse myself in whatever I found along the way. Of course, as I say, my original power greater than me was the combined power of the group, but it didn't take long before I started to repair my relationship with an actual higher power, God, who I still have in my life today. And, you know, I do recommend that we stop acting like we can be and that we can control and that we have any power, unless we ask for God's help and then use the power that comes to us through that help. In other words, the basic thing is to seek God's will and do God's will, not Bill's will, but God's will. So does that help a little bit? Explain it? Maybe not. Anyway, there's an awful lot to this, and as I say, we don't have to talk about, my personal experience. We can, but we don't have to. If it makes people uncomfortable, just know that if you're out there listening, you can call in and ask any question about anything that NASCA does, anything we stand for, any kind of recovery. Linda is actually a counselor herself, so she has a lot to share, I know. And Tammy now has really good recovery, and Bobby too. You know, I'm frankly shocked that Bobby could listen to me for 4 years and still have some nice things to say occasionally. You know? Jeez. So there's God's will for you right there.
Right. Well, we're building a community together. So
right.
I think our stories matter. So people who are listening, you know, they hear our stories. If they're at the beginning of their recovery path, hopefully they can see that they're not alone in this and that we understand and we have a lot of similar stories. So I think it helps, but that's just me.
Well, I can certainly,
give
you a sketch of what my early life was like. If you think it's for the newcomer's sake that I could do that, I'm happy to do it. But I also don't want to repeat and repeat and repeat the same story. It's not a different story each night. Each time I'm here, it's the same story. I don't make up stuff, you know. But the fact of the matter was that as a child, I was sexually assaulted by priests and brothers, mostly, but by a whole bunch of people, all men, and that that this went on between 11 and the end of high school, and nothing's ever occurred beyond that point. But I was so beat up, angry, pissed off, you know, and ashamed at what had happened to me that when I discovered alcohol, which was frankly after high school, because I went to a very sort of closed, a cloistered type high school. I went to a minor seminary. I was thinking about being a priest. And so we didn't mm-hmm. have girls around. It was an all boys boarding school. And there was not a lot of drinking. We weren't allowed to drink. But when I got to college, that all changed. And I went to a secular university, the University of Toronto, drank like a fish, threw up a lot, crashed cars, drove in blackouts, you know, was extremely inappropriate later in my 20s with women, learned how to play guitar, and I was just, I was horrified by who Bill was, and I was willing to do anything that I had to not feel like myself. And that, as I say, that behavior continued until I was 30. So that's a nutshell story right there. There's lots of detail that you can find other places, or I'm happy to answer any questions tonight, too. I do want to say this is a show, as are all our shows, that we hope to attract newcomers. And there are no dumb questions. There are no dumb topics. You're all important if you're out there listening. We want you to know that you're the most important person here, frankly, when you come in new. And we do the shows for you, not for Bill, not for Linda, not for Tammy or Bobby, but for the person that's listening who perhaps is reluctant to share their own story. And all we want you to do about it is come back again tomorrow and listen to another show, or go to the website and check it out, or go to our Facebook group and join it, or whatever you wish. We don't have a list of things you have to do here. It's another reason that NASCA is unique. There is no have-to list. You don't have to recover in any particular way or any particular time. You don't have to register even. You can use a pseudonym or a screen name. You know, you don't have to talk on the show. You can just listen and so forth. A little different than a lot of other groups. It's unique.
Okay. Any comments? All the mics are open. We have Linda and Bobby. Any comments?
Okay. Is that Bobby?
I had the mute on. I didn't realize I had the mute on. Sorry. Go ahead, Bill.
I thought Bobby wanted to speak.
Hello?
But that's okay if he didn't.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to talk about the first three steps, Tammy. Okay.
Okay. That'll be great. Thanks.
All right. The first step is we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable. Now, as I said, I did do that, but I modified, if you wish, slightly the reading of the first steps and the other steps by saying, like, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and every person, place, thing, and situation in our life, and that our lives had become unmanageable according to the way we wanted them to go or the time frame we wanted them to go. I added those words mentally, okay, which meant my powerlessness had to be complete, and my attempt to control stuff had to go. I believe there's very little in Bill's control, at least at first. And I had to surrender as completely as I possibly could to every person, place, thing, and situation, which, of course, included the child abuse stuff, my story of my life. And then the second step, which some people object to, is came to believe in a power greater than ourselves, which could restore us to sanity. Now, the insanity, to start at the back end of that, is trying the same thing over and over and getting the same result. expecting different results is insanity. But we, despite all other records, you know, to the contrary, we do the same things over and over and over and expect different results. So what I had to learn to do was to have no expectation. As I said, at this point, I had to find a power greater than me. And as I said earlier, my first power greater than me was the combined authority, knowledge, wisdom, and experience of the group, the whole group. Alcoholics Anonymous obviously knew more about this stuff than I did. And so, you know, maybe it was even feeble of me to say that. But you know what? Any power greater than you matters, and it works, as long as it's not you. You see, a lot of us are very big egotists, and we think we know. This actually starts in childhood. We think we know. Remember how you used to think you knew better than your parents, you know, and so forth? We all did that. But we carry that childhood mind into adulthood, and a lot of times we think we know better than the whole world and everything in it and blah, 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 and it gets us in trouble over and over because the world is more powerful than me. I get that now. But I didn't act that way until I came to step two, and I had to find a power greater than me, and it became the group. Step three says we turned our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood him. Okay? And what that meant for me was, that power greater than me, which they use the word God with a capital G, that was still, for me, that's a power greater than myself. It allowed me to continue on the path. But at the same time, I started to see that I had not asked to get into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had not asked to have the young adulthood that I had, nor the childhood I had. Nor the parents that I had or the birth I had, and all these things, somebody else had made those decisions for me, and they'd got me to where I was on that given day, those given days. And I decided I was going to trust. You can either have a higher power or not. That's the way I see it. Either you have a God or not, and if you do have a God, he's everything or he's nothing. Well, I chose to have a God that was everything. And I gave up the Catholic God, using that strictly speaking. I didn't know who God was going to be because, you know what? God had to be bigger than me. God had to be beyond my capability to understand God in order for it to work for Bill. Because if I could understand God, then I was defining God. I don't define God. God is beyond definition for me. And that was the sort of early, again, introduction to get me into the meat of the program, which follows after the first three steps. The first three steps introduce us and get us prepared for the work. The next several steps are the work, and the last two or three steps are sort of maintenance, including passing it on. That being of service thing is part of every 12-step program. That having had a spiritual awakening, it says, as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other still suffering survivors of child abuse and practice these principles in all our affairs. But that doesn't really happen until you are a good, significant way into the meat of the program, the middle steps. And it's, you know, it's amazing how AA works. You get sponsors, which are people who've just been there longer than you. You get to go to any group you want. The groups all have rules, and there's discipline behind them. But as long as you follow those rules, nobody kicks you out. I thought they were going to kick me out, and they didn't. Nobody ever did. And they let me, find my relationship with a God of that I didn't understand, but a God of my understanding, which is one that's too big for me to understand. I just have to believe in him. And I think my job today is to seek God's will instead of Bill's will and follow God's will. Seek and follow God's will. And see, An alcoholic is a person with a giant ego and very little self-esteem. Ego means that we think we know how to control and manage stuff, for me. And the self-esteem, of course, is how we feel about ourselves. And what AA says is, we will give you a process by which you don't get to take steps. You admit that you're powerless. You can't control it. But we'll give you things you can do that are towards the solution and away from the problem. And these things are God's will. And as you do them, stuff happens that's different than the pattern of what you used to have. The insanity becomes sanity, basically. And when you take a person with a big ego and little self-esteem and you say you don't get to take the credit, because the credit really belongs to God, but you do get to you do get to take the credit in effect for the work that you're doing, for the process itself, for the energy that you're using, for keeping coming back, for doing the steps. That you get to take credit for, but not the results. It flips that around. So you have, it's not about ego, and you increase your self-esteem dramatically. Because you are doing it, but it's not your power that's allowing you to do it. It's God's. Does that make sense? Any of that? Or am I just rambling?
No, we're listening to you. It makes sense.
We got a couple other people calling in here. I'm not sure who they
are. Yeah, I'm trying to look.
Might want to bring them on.
Let me pop. Okay. All right. The first caller that we have here is calling from area code 617. Area code 617, who do we have the pleasure of speaking with?
Hi, it's Rick in Massachusetts. I'm a little late coming to this. I had an AA meeting, as it would happen, and I've been really heavily triggered by what's been going on today. And I really needed the AA meeting, and I talked with one of the greeters afterwards, and it was good to call on Zoom. And then he called me, and I just was able to just kind of cry myself a river. And okay. So I'm doing better now, but I just wanted to say hi to everyone, and I'll just sit here and listen.
Okay.
Well, thanks for calling in, Rick.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, Rick. And your mic is open, so anytime you want to jump in, please feel free to do so.
Okay, thank you. Can you hear
me
okay?
We can hear you just fine.
Oh, yeah.
Next, I'm going to go to area code 867. Area code 867, who do we have the pleasure of speaking with?
Hi, it's Anne Marie. I'm calling from Yellowknife. I'm just here listening today.
Anne-Marie? Okay, well, and where are you calling from, Anne-Marie? What state?
Yellowknife, Canada.
Canada, okay.
Northern Territories. Anne-Marie and Rick are both people that Linda and I know from the daytime recovery meetings that we were running, and I'm delighted to see them both here tonight. You can share if you wish, but you don't have to. You can simply listen. It wouldn't hurt to have a question or two thrown out here, because this is a question and answer discussion, and I'm willing to go in whatever direction the panel, which includes everybody here, would like me to go. So.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions for Bill right now? We've been discussing recovery. We've discussed addiction. We've discussed how the addiction sometimes affects. We use that as a escape for our trauma. So that's what we have discussed so far. So all the mics are open. If someone has a question for Bill, now would be a great time.
Well, I did definitely use alcohol as an escape from my PTSD. And I mean, I know what that's like, and I know that it just buried the original abuse even deeper, and it just hurt even more and more. And what happened was I was, quote, rescued from my alcohol by a cult, which just buried my feelings even deeper and deeper. And that's been the story of my life. I've got all these feelings that are starting to come out now all of a sudden. And it's just because they were buried all that time. And I was a dry drunk for 31 years, and I still am. And it's just learning to let those feelings bubble up and feel them.
Well, that's right, Rick. Privileged enough, when I was 1 year, before I was 1 year sober, to go to a convention, and I heard our oldest member at the time, he was AA number 6. His name was Charlie B. He was from California at the time, but he had originally sobered up because he was in the Merchant Marines. And he knew he had an alcohol problem, just like you and I knew we had a problem. And he figured the only way he was going to escape was to go on board without any liquor and never get off the ship. So he went around the world a couple of times, never getting off the ship and just holding on to the rails. You know, oh my God, I hope I can, you know, last another night without drinking. And 2 years into this, he came into Brooklyn Harbor and he heard about this little meeting that was going on up on the hill. And it was Bill Wilson and a couple other guys. Bill was trying to get a couple of guys sober. And the guy went up there and he learned that what Bill was sharing was how to deal with the alcohol problem. They didn't have the book yet. It was only a few months old. But he followed their path and he never drank again. So I'm talking to this guy and he has a little badge on it. It says 49 years. I said, but really, you have 51 years of not drinking. He said, 51 years. I said, yeah, those 2 years that were on the boat, you didn't drink. And then you went up the hill without drinking. And then you've stayed sober ever since 49 years. He says, yeah. He says, I have 50 years without drinking, but 49 years of sobriety, because I don't count the time when I had a bad attitude. Okay. And that's what you get when you're dry drunking, you know, when you're dry drunk, when you are an alcoholic and it's eating you up and you're not using alcohol or drugs or any of the other solutions that can be used. And instead you're holding on to the rail. So this guy taught me when I was a few months sober that the time that he spent dry drinking, he didn't even count that. Although he didn't drink in between, he was 49 years. He was proud to be AA number 6, obviously. And, of course, he's dead a long time now. But Charlie B, that was his story. And he spent 20 minutes with me. I was shocked. He would spend that time with me, a little newcomer. And he's telling me about how he helped write the book. Because the first 100 people wrote the book. I wrote the book for you, he's saying. Stuff like that. It was really impressive that he would spend that kind of time with little old me. And I was easily impressed, I suppose, but Charlie was sincere. By the time I met him, he was kind of feeble. He was blind. He was lying reclining on a chaise lounge by the pool at this convention center where this big convention was going on, and there were 2,000 people all sober, which shocked me too, in attendance. A year later, I went to AA's 50th birthday, and I was 1 year sober on that day, same day. And it was held in Montreal at the Expos Stadium. The Montreal Expos have a big, you know, baseball stadium. So there were 50,000 people in the stadium to hold the spiritual meetings. And I think 35,000 of them were alcoholics in recovery, and another 15,000 were friends and spouses who were in Al-Anon. And it was amazing to be in town for 3 days with 50,000 people all in there for the same reason. It's just shocking to me. But I wasn't going to take my recovery for granted at that point. When I crossed back into the country, I told the guard, said, why were you in Canada? I said, well, I was at this convention for AA. And he says, oh, yeah, how long you got? I said, I got a year. And he said, oh, a year is very good. He says to me, now you can stop counting. Apparently, he was an alcoholic too. And his message was, it's not about the time. It's about the quality of what you do with the time. And, you know, it was a really important trip all around from every aspect. But, you know, there's a little story I don't tell too often, Tammy.
Well, Bill, this whole thing about dry drunk, it wasn't like all time wasted for me. It wasn't just like I was just living a very angry guy. Yeah, I was a very angry guy, but I was also in recovery for maternal incest and cult abuse. And that took a lot of work. And staying sober was elemental to that. That was a foundational requirement of getting recovery. So it wasn't time just treading water. I wasn't just treading water as a, you know?
Yeah, I do understand.
Yeah. It wasn't time wasted at all. And I still have a lot of PTSD recovery to do. But not drinking is still essential. And I've tried to live by the 12 steps, even though I wasn't going to meetings all that time. But the one thing that I didn't do was an ongoing inventory, which I really fell down on. And that's why things went awry in my marital situation. So, okay, enough for now.
We started this discussion based on Bobby Hyde's sharing how he had been in many 12-step programs and really hadn't gotten the solution until he came to NASCA, and that was 4 years ago. Bobby is here on the panel with us tonight, and he's from Miami, Florida. I don't know, Bobby, do you want to make a comment on some of the sharing that's gone on since you shared?
I'm right here, yeah. So here I am. Yeah. That's Eric in Boston. That's what his guy's name is, Eric?
Rick.
Oh, Rick. Where are you, Rick? You in Brookline? You in Salem? You
Bobby,
in Belmont?
Bobby.
Brockton?
Bobby, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about what do you want to share about what you've heard based on what you started. It's your theme.
Oh. Well, yeah, it was my theme, but you were giving a very very precise and a very theory. Of your transforming your years in AA and giving a really strong theory of what was going on along your years, and then you come to today, which you really really can put it in perfect words, and I have to say that when you describe and define AA, you come from a point of view of complete understanding, because you know every syllable, every word really resonates to AA. There's not general terms, which is very important. That's why I was trying to tell you before that you don't talk in generalities. NASCA is not a generality place. It's
right.
Really. Every time you get a professional comes on to the survivor, professional is not talking generalities. Professional has already done to a slew of patients, has gone to a slew of writing, has gone to a slew of conferences, and you can hear it. You know,
right.
It's very important. It's very important because to hear a professional talk on the subject. Because amateurs just are amateurs, and it doesn't resonate when you're trying to absorb it. Because you're an amateur, an amateur just doesn't talk to an amateur. Because you know you're looking for a professor, looking for a biologist, you're looking for a psychologist that's going to give boom, 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 boom. You know, give it right over your head and absorb it.
Right.
Yeah.
So let me make a comment here, Bobby, because the most recent couple of people that joined us didn't hear me say that, you know, NASCA recommends many different styles of recovery. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, we always have a co-host who happens to be me tonight, they speak from their own background and their sort of professional experience, but also from the fact that they're a survivor. And we can approach these things from either direction. It just happens that tonight it's me, and my background is in a 12-step experience, but it could have been somebody who had a psychiatrist that was very helpful, or a minister that was very helpful, or a law enforcement person that was very helpful, or whatever. But Tuesdays and Thursdays, we always have that hyphenate, a survivor who's also a professional in some capacity. And since there occasionally is a fifth Tuesday or Wednesday, or Tuesday or Thursday, I fill in, which just happens to be tonight. Tomorrow is May 1st, so we don't have this issue next month. But we did in April. And we just happen to be talking 12 steps. Now, we don't have to. We can talk about any kind of recovery or any issue in recovery, too, because each of these co-hosts has their own personal experience. And they're all well-versed in the various kinds of recovery that can be used. And NASCA has no objection to anybody using any particular path they want. In fact, we share about them all, and we help a person select the tools that are going to be good for them.
Hi, Bill.
Let me stop you right there. We have someone who has called in from area code 207. Area code 207, who am I speaking with?
Kathy,
That's Kathy.
I wanted to hear a little more, and I can't. My family members know I can't hold on the phone, but I've really been listening. I didn't listen to the beginning as Rick. I was doing other things before I got, but that was really nice to hear. And my sister went through the 12-step. I've not been an alcoholic. That wasn't drugs and alcohol and addiction wasn't my road. But anyway, I always hear, and my question was going to be before pulled it off the table. You don't have to go back to this because I was really enthralled in listening to Rick and Bobby. But I wanted to know if you could elaborate on exactly how and what and is self-esteem. And then I'm going to hang up and listen. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay.
It's how one reflects about themselves. And most of us come into the recovery process, kind of very ashamed of who we are and, you know, really hoping that we never have to talk about it. Of course we do, but we hope that we couldn't. We feel very little self-worth. It's based on the fact that everything we've tried up until this point has fallen, to the wayside. And as newcomers, hopefully we're beat up enough to give up the way we used to do things and to accept the possibility that some of these other people know what they're talking about. And that was the power greater than myself was the group, you know, the sort of the combined voice of the group, the power of the group that I believed could have more influence than Bill's way of thinking, which had not been working all those years. Yeah, that's kind of what I meant by self-esteem. And I learned that I get to take credit for what I do here, and I get a lot of self-esteem from because I put that, you know, the proverbial one foot in front of the other for years now, and I haven't, you know, fallen back. I've incrementally fallen back, but not back to drinking again, certainly. And I get to take credit for the effort, but not the results. The results are yours. Are the groups and by extrapolation, my higher powers, not Bill's. Now I heard Anne Marie was going to say something, and I don't want her to feel like she's neglected.
Could you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, I don't really have much to say on this topic because I haven't. Like I have gone through the experiences of drinking, but I've never been to AA per se. But I do have experiences with my partner doing AA and how that works for him, and just being part of like being that support for him. It's not easy for either of us, I just have to say. But the best thing you can do is just fight every day. be the best together.
Right, and there's a program for you, of course, Anne. It's Anne-Marie, by the way. And that's Al-Anon, of course, which is a very powerful 12-step group. And it's for the friend or the spouse or the family member who is not an alcoholic but has an alcoholic in their life. So that, I just offer that in case you're not familiar with it or for anybody else that's listening. And it is a 12-step group. So, again, it's another version of using the same process but plugging in a different problem. You're not the alcoholic. You have an alcoholic in your life. or you're a gambler, or you're a drug user, or you're a overeater, or you're a – there's many, many of these programs that all have borrowed. You're a sex addict. There's one for sex addicts and so forth. There's an incest survivor one. Incest Survivors Anonymous.
Survivors of Incest Anonymous.
Sure,
S-I-A.
If you want.
S-I-A. Survivors of Incest Anonymous, not Incest Survivors Anonymous.
Okay, if you want.
No, there are two, but the bigger one is S-I-A. Yeah.
Okay, then there you go. But if you don't get comfortable using a 12-step program, you're not really taking advantage of it. You're not in the solution, really. The whole idea is to get comfortable. So it allowed me to be comfortable enough to address my child abuse issues. But that's just me.
I would also.
Sorry,
like
Bill,
to
I didn't mean to intrude upon your thought there.
It's quite all right.
I would like to add in there, like, you are, have been since the beginning of these, like, since I've met you, quite an inspiration, Bill. And I want to thank you for coming up with these meetings on Zoom. Otherwise, I wouldn't be going through this recovery support that I am going through, and it's really nice to have that outlet for somebody so isolated in the North. It makes it really, really nice, and everybody's so welcoming, and they support you no matter what, and I just have to say thank you for that, and you're an inspiration. You inspire me
to
really want to open my own group eventually.
Sure. We all inspire each other, and this is a WE program, a WE organization, if you want. We call ourselves the NASCA family, because that's how we try to behave. After all, so many of us, our original problems were with our family. We can't go to our family for the solution or for comfort, you know, or for understanding even. Many of them are in denial and always will be. But we can create a family of choice, which is what NASCA's members can become for us who are close to us. And I got to say, Anne-Marie and Rick and Linda, all of who, and Bobby, you've all participated in the Zoom meetings. I think they're an excellent tool. That's an additional tool that's new to us. We may expand it. I don't know. But right now it's 3 days a week, and it's doing great, I feel. A really good additional program to the 30-something things that we all do as volunteers already for everybody in the community. But God bless you guys. You're doing great. I want you to hang in there and keep coming back. And thank you for your kind words, Anne. But it's really, although I'm the founder, yes, it's really the combined effort of many, dozens and dozens of people that have made NASCA the what it is. And I am a part of that, sure. But so are all the other people on the show today, for example, and all the show tonight, including you. We all belong. It's all of our group. You know, it's we. Ownership is in our. It's our website. It's our show. It's our. You know, including you. All of us. So. Now, we do have 15 minutes left, okay. So there's plenty of time to bring up an additional topic or something. Go ahead.
Oh, no. You're right. We're about to, I was just picking back up the telephone. I had it on mute listening to you talk. I had to pick it back up. But you're right. We have 15 minutes left. We have Linda from New Jersey, our co-host Bill, Bobby in Florida, Rick in Massachusetts, and Anne-Marie in Canada. So the Zoom meeting, so those are going, what days do you have those, Bill?
We have them, they were an extrapolation out of the Sunday in-person meeting we had here at the NASCA home. We couldn't meet anymore.
Okay.
So we made it a webinar, and
mm-hmm.
and then we decided we'd do it three times a week. So Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday, each one of those at 2 o'clock.
Okay.
There's information on the front page of the website about the link that you click on to register, but you only have to do that
mm-hmm.
once, and you get sent an email with all the dates that are coming up. We're going to do them for 20 weeks at least,
mm-hmm.
and also instructions on how to join the room. So you keep that email because it tells you how to join the meetings, you know, over and over and over. But, yeah, they're
okay.
going great, Tammy. We've got like 15 people a couple of times on some of them, and regularly we have 9, you know, so 9, 10, 15. We can accommodate up to 100. I don't know how it's
wow.
going to be when we have 40 and 50 and more, but it should be interesting.
Well, you know, my boss forces me on a Zoom conference call, a three and a half hour conference call every Thursday. And we've started doing the Zoom, and it is kind of cool because when you pull it up on your screen, whoever talks, it'll zoom in on whoever is talking. So if I'm starting to talk, then everybody will see my picture will be predominant. So if you have like 40 people on there, whoever talks, their picture should pop up. So it is a pretty unique tool, fairly new.
We have instituted the necessity to raise your hand to get called on. And the host, of course, which is either
oh.
Linda or myself, calls on people so that we have a kind of a decorum to follow. With nine to 15 people, we can have people repeatedly share. But we don't want any
mm-hmm.
one person to occupy the meeting. So as long as people have their opportunity and their second opportunity and perhaps their third, we're okay, but we raise our hands and get called on, and it's not hard to do this way. I don't know what happens when you get – see, I think when you have 50, you're going to have to raise your hands. You know, there's no other
yeah.
way to do it. And the setting
okay.
that you're using is the one that the current speaker is the big screen and the smaller screens are at the bottom. There's another configuration which all the screens are of equal size. So that's
right,
just a selection on your end. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I've seen that too, but I can see where they kind of move around, even if it's a selection. It does on ours
yes,
anyway.
No, they do on ours
but
too.
But anyway. Yeah. But it's a pretty cool program. A lot of, you know, like today we were having a meeting and I left my cell phone at home. Not my cell phone, but my cord, and my computer at work doesn't have a camera. So I usually pull up my big screen at work and then I go on my cell phone. My cell phone died, so I ended up having to call in. So they couldn't see my picture, but I could still participate in the show. So there,
right.
Even if somebody doesn't want to, you know, have their picture on there in the video, you can still participate as I did today.
Right, and Tammy, just the way we respect anonymity on these shows, if a person didn't want to talk, they didn't have to. But if they wanted to listen on their computer, they could. If they want to change their name and use a screen name, that's no problem with us. We do the same thing on the Zoom meetings where a person does not have to be on camera. There's never any recording allowed, and we raise our hands to get called on. So, and you can change your name. All this is sort of a protection for the newer person usually, or the person whose
right.
hair looks a mess, maybe. Can, you know, they don't have to be on camera if they don't want to be. And people can come and
right.
go, too, to visit the restroom or whatever, or just got to go, and that's it. But it's working
right.
great as a tool, I feel.
Cool. Very good. Well, we've got about 10 minutes left, so if anybody has any questions, and I don't want to leave anybody out or give anybody, you know, not give anybody an opportunity to talk if they want to. Anne-Marie, do you have any thoughts or questions that you'd like to ask in the 10 minutes we have left?
No, I'm good right now. Thank you.
Okay. How about you? You're welcome. How about you? Go ahead.
Maybe I
go
will.
Ahead, Anne-Marie.
I'm
go
one
ahead.
Of those people that personally don't
okay.
like to be on camera, so I've chosen in the meeting to not be on camera. So, and I found that that makes me really comfortable, and everybody's really supportive of that. And if anybody like ever has an issue with me not being on camera, and I have no problem for a split second just showing you my face so that you don't feel uncomfortable. Just like to point that out to you.
Anne-Marie has been on camera for short periods of time, as she says, a number of times, and she's wonderful. She's adorable, frankly. I mean, I can say that. I'm an old guy. Sorry, Anne-Marie. I don't mean any offense. But, you know, there's no problem with staying off camera either. But that's up to the individual.
There
they
you
control
go.
Their camera.
Okay.
In yeah.
Yeah, I know when I'm on my Zoom at work, sometimes I'm on my telephone. I'll have to hit the mute, throw the phone down so they can't see me. So, you know, I can sneeze. You know, that's a big taboo around here is, you know, if you sneeze, everybody's like, oh, my God. So if you have allergies, you're just, you know, in the soup. But anyway, thank you for that. Not let alone cough. Okay, well, thank you, Anne-Marie. I appreciate that. How about you, Rick? Do you have any comments? You know, we've got about 8 minutes left. Is there anything that you'd like to get out there before, you know, we do wrap up the show?
Yeah, it's it was nice that I got in for the last 45 minutes. It was really good. Coda, if you wish to use a musical term, to the gut-wrenching stuff that I've been going through all day. And I've made a full-time job out of recovery. I am retired, so I can do that. and I can laugh, which means I got some good recovery from this and from other things earlier today. But it's a day-to-day proposition. And I don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. If it's going to be happy, if it's going to be more sadness, more crying, I'm ready for it. I'm ready to take it on. I was feeling suicidal earlier today, but that's gone by, and I can just see that as just a symptom of the horrors and pain that I've gone through that are just now starting to come to light on a deeper level than ever before. So I guess that's my coda, if you want, for today. Thanks.
Okay. Bill, do you have some comments for Rick?
For Rick? Coda is another 12-step
yeah.
program.
Oh, no, I didn't mean coda like that.
I know. It's a
musical term meaning the tail end music that ends up a piece of music.
I know what it is. I know.
Oh, okay, fine.
Yeah, no, but it is also a 12-step program.
Yeah, I know.
Let's see. What do I have to say? Boy, we talked a lot about how feelings don't kill you, you know, that they do change. And Rick is a testament to that just now. He felt literally suicidal earlier. He shared that with us, and he doesn't anymore. He's laughing, at least a little bit. Hey,
yeah.
that's a big change. That's a big change. Come on. And, you know, who knows what tomorrow is going to bring. We don't do tomorrow right now. We do the rest of the night right now. We stay in the moment, and we do the best we can with every moment we have. Some are great and some are not so great, but we keep moving forward. And I think over time, we recognize that we've made progress. It could take 6 weeks or 6 months, but we look back and say, you know, 6 months ago, I was a mess, and I'm not a mess anymore. I've made a lot of progress. I'm not finished, but I've made a lot of progress. That's self-esteem. See, that's
right.
That is a measure of your self-esteem, but it's not something you do quickly. It happens over some period of time. So.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you, Rick, for your comments, and thank you, Bill, as well. How about you, Linda? Do you have some closing comments you'd like to make before we wrap up the show? We've got about 5 minutes left.
I was just thinking about how great NASCA is and how these afternoon meetings had started. Bill, you started the Sunday meeting, and then I was thinking that people are home and stuck in their houses all day. Why not do it in the weekday, too? And we started them, and it just took off just by a suggestion, just by a thought. And I want to encourage, like, the newer people, Rick and Anne-Marie, that if you have ideas about NASCA, if you have ways to improve it, things that you might want to do, ideas, suggestions, I mean, I think it's just so wonderful how Bill is so open to this being a team thing and us helping each other. And I just want to encourage everybody that we need all of us to do that. And so this is really, COVID-19 is a horrible thing, but God's going to use it to bring some good things out of it. So thanks.
I couldn't agree more with that sentiment. That's absolutely right. And I think we're actually pretty well positioned because we're familiar with trauma as a group. All of us are familiar with trauma. The general public is not. To them, this is just like earth-shattering and so forth. To us, it's one of those inconvenient things that's just a reality of our life. And it doesn't have to add to our trauma. We already know trauma, and we know how to resolve trauma. And there's lots and lots of tools that are kind of at our disposal, like the meetings, like the phone calls we make, like the groups that we already have. They're already set up for us, in other words. So we're in pretty good shape as a group, as a whole, to deal with this extra layer of, life on life's terms. That's what we have to deal with, and we're all dealing with it. We all on an equal level, except when Tammy coughs on the radio show, then we got to watch out.
I know, right? I'm the only one left in the club. Literally, everybody has gone home. We are different hours now, so we closed up at 8 o'clock. They left out of here at 8:30, so I'm the only one in here, so they can't hear me cough right now. So, anywho, thank you very much for that, Linda. Bill, you were about to
Our
say
group
something?
Is made, yeah, I just want to finish with this thought. Our group is made up of some amazing people, literally thousands of them, and from all over the world. We have our friend Dr. Raz come on the show, on the Zoom shows every day because he's in Jerusalem. And it happens to be evening when it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon here. He can make those shows. These are difficult for him because it's in the wee hours of the morning. But he's called in and done them, but it's hard. But, having these additional forums and who knows what we'll have in the future, we have people like Rick, who's an older man. He's retired, as he said, and Anne-Marie, who's a young lady, on the other end of the spectrum, if you want, but still dealing with the same issues. And everybody's on an equal footing. And she's in Yellowknife. If you didn't get that before, Yellowknife is way up north in the Northern Territories in Canada. And Tammy is talking about being at a club. It's a yacht club in Florida. I mean, you couldn't be more extreme. But it doesn't matter. We all deal with the same issues,
trauma,
the abuse that we experienced as kids.
Right. Well, I just got the 90-second mark. I have to wrap it up. I want to thank everybody. Bobby, I didn't get to you. You want to say a quick bye? Well, I've only got a couple of seconds, though. Bobby?
Yeah, here I am. I'm going to say the same thing Linda said a minute ago.
Okay. All right, well, I just got the 60-second mark, so I wanted to thank Linda in New Jersey, Bobby in Florida, Rick in Massachusetts, Anne-Marie in Canada, and Kathy, who popped in a couple of times, and we know she listens on stream. Thank you very much for calling in, and thank you for your support. I really do appreciate it. Tomorrow night, we do have a special guest who's going to be telling their story, Alicia Moe. Batty? Am I saying that correctly, Bill?
Yeah.
But anyway, she will be our guest tomorrow night. Okay. Well, with that said, I'm going to wrap it up and say God bless the children of the world and God bless adult survivors of child abuse. Everybody have a good evening. Thank you. Bye.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.